Hey guys, my fellow journalist Karen Benardello, who has been featured on the podcast a few times, is suffering a long and expensive recovery due to a serious medical condition that has resulted in vision impairment of one eye. Please donate any amount you can. Truly, every single dollar will help via PayPal or Venmo at kbenardello@aol.com. That's kbenardello@aol.com, so we can help aid in her recovery and help her to get back to work in our field as soon as she improves. Check out Karen's reviews and interviews on Film Factual and Cinema Daily US. If you aren't already a fan of hers, you will be. Thanks, guys. Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time. Hey guys, I'm Rand Younger, and this is another episode of Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together, one frame at a time. And with me tonight, as always, I have a lovely panel of guest critics. We have Mr. Alan Imperial. Welcome back, Alan. Your second time. Welcome back.
Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. And we have back for more, we've got Eric Godfrey and Dobby.
Passed out here.
He's a little tuckered out. But he's one of my favorite furry critics, so I'm happy he's here.
Oh, glad to be here.
Yes, yes. So real quick, guys, before we get into the nitty-gritty, how was your Oscar telecast? Did you see it? Did you enjoy what you saw, Eric?
I did, and I feel like for the first time, like I can talk, like even random people who I don't know at work that don't really watch it, everybody won't stop talking about Gosling's performance of I'm Just Ken.
Yes, absolutely. That was awesome. Great callback to Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, I think that's going to be one of the all-time great Oscar like ceremony moments is that performance.
Perfect. I was a little stunned to see Emma Stone win Best Actress. I thought Lily Gladstone was going to win that. But what's better than a good surprising Oscar show? So
and on the last episode, we actually talked about it, wishing that she would win. So big, big win.
There you go. Alan, did you enjoy the show?
I was in DC, so unfortunately I couldn't catch it, but I'm very happy that Godzilla Minus One won. That's a lot of ones.
And that is on my shame list right now. I have not had the pleasure, but I will before the year is out for sure at some point. So, gentlemen, we're going to be doing a retro review tonight, and we're going to be discussing the 1999 supernatural horror film Sleepy Hollow, directed by the great Tim Burton. And this is actually a loose adaptation of the short story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, by Washington Irving from 1820. And I consider this, this is probably maybe top 10 or top 15 favorite Tim Burton films. It's got all his signature trademarks. It's got fantastic performances, great production design. It was actually, it won the Oscar that year for best art direction, and deservedly so. You also have a beautiful, beautiful score by Maestro Danny Elfman. And, you know, you've got Johnny Depp before he became Jack Sparrow. So he was kind of like a normal human being character in this, which I really respected. And what I really miss, actually, like really miss for the past 20 years. But we'll get into that in a minute. You've got a really beautiful Christina Ricci, who's kind of a emotionless love interest here. But the supporting cast, Miranda Richardson, Michael Gambon, Casper Van Dien, and Jeffrey Jones, wonderful supporting cast. Yeah, and then there's much more after that. But this movie, like, it's 25 years old, but I rewatched it last night, and it definitely holds up. It's a fun movie. It's violent. It's ridiculous. And it's just gorgeous to look at. So, Alan, what were your thoughts on this 1999 gem?
I forgot how scary it was. I had like real jump scare moments that were definitely earned in the film and weren't just there to scare you, but like were part of the plot. And it's just, oh man, really horrific and definitely earns its rated R.
Right. I think this might have been the first or one of the few Tim Burton films that were rated R, if I'm not mistaken. Because
Oh,
most
wow,
of,
I didn't know that.
I think it is, yeah, because a lot of his
I think
previous,
you're right, yeah.
a lot of his previous stuff is PG or PG-13. So, but this one is really gruesome and it is so deliciously fun. I love the violence in this, and it's like so over the top too. It's got that kind of same vein as like Sweeney Todd, and same like same color saturation too. It's very like washed out and gray, and it really fits the mood of the film perfectly. So yeah, there's just a lot of beautiful things going on with this movie. Eric, what were your thoughts on this movie?
I've been a big fan of this one. I remember seeing this in theaters back when it first came out because that was when I was going very much through the Tim Burton era that everybody was, and also the fact that this was peak Tim Burton Johnny Depp. So he was still the weirdo, but he wasn't the he hadn't done the Jack Sparrow over the top one. He was just that fun weird guy,
Right.
and it's and I actually had the realization it's been a long time, so I've actually seen it as a whole. And it was a lot of fun revisiting this one. And you're right about the violence. I had forgotten just how much limbs and heads and chopping in half. And but I always still remember, and I remembered it then. And I remember how much I love just screaming Christopher Walken as the Headless Horseman
Yes.
with his razor teeth, just yelling and shouting whenever you get to see him, and just
Yeah.
how much fun he is.
He had like zero dialogue. It was just all yelling and grunting. And
Yeah, just walking around. Yeah.
yeah, I think this was his second Burton film after Batman Returns, actually, which
And
is interesting.
one thing I also want to note about the thing I loved about you're right about it had that very desaturated, that very dark look that is very, very common now. But what I appreciate is that once everything's all done at Sleepy Hollow, where it is once we get to New York, it's all, hey, color's back in the world. It's like Burton letting you know, like, yeah, that was Sleepy Hollow, was this
Right.
dark, evil place cursed by a headless horseman. And now here we are, turn of the century New York, color and leaves and trees and
I think
snow.
the only scenes of color and like, kind of beautiful, like flowery settings were in the dream sequences of Johnny Depp as a child. And it's interesting. And also that was actually Lisa Marie as his mother. In those flashback sequences, she was actually in Mars Attacks. She was actually partners with Tim Burton throughout the 90s, and he used her. She was basically like his muse, and he used her in a few things. I think he used her in Ed Wood, definitely Mars Attacks as the female Martian who tries to assassinate Jack Nicholson's president, and just beautifully weird. I love those flashback sequences and. Just be very dreamlike, very Edward Scissorhands, in my opinion.
No, this takes the dark gothic fairy tale, and it works so well with Burton's strength, everybody's strength, even if blonde Christina Ricci is still weird to me.
Is it because of the hair or the other reasons?
Yeah, I'm just not, it's like the eyebrows, everything. It's just like I'm not used to Christina Ricci blonde, like blonde.
Fair enough. Yeah, I wonder if any I was reading about it. I didn't really see if any other actresses were considered for the role. So I guess she was in Tim Burton's mind all along. It's quite possible.
Was this the first time you worked with her again after I was trying to think of? No way, was this?
I think this is the
Yeah,
first.
I meant to look more at the history, but I forgot to.
I would have thought that he would have used Winona Ryder again. I think that would have been an interesting choice.
That's true.
You know.
But no, I like I said, the movie completely holds up. It was great watching it again.
Yeah, it definitely holds up. It's a lot of fun. It's gruesome, like we mentioned. And actually, I just found out that Ray Park was the Headless Horseman.
Yeah, he was in all the fight scenes for the stunt double.
He had like a special, I think it was like a green screen mask to hide his head, but basically all those fight scenes were him. It was the same year he did Phantom Menace. And a year before he did X-Men, so that was a really hot time for Ray, and it's great. Just the movements, it looks so good. Also, Industrial Light and Magic supplied the visual effects, the computer, the CGI here, and yeah, it's just a beautiful film. I can't get enough of it. I'm so happy.
I, yeah.
It's been a
I
number
think
of
one thing I
years.
really, I think one of the highlights is Johnny Depp's Ichabod Crane, because one of the things I really like is one of the things I do remember, especially from the old Disney cartoon, is Ichabod is a very awkward, clumsy, oafish person, and there's a weird competence yet incompetence that Johnny Depp keeps sliding between, like this forensics officer who's terrified of corpses and this person who is incredibly squeamish but still gets the job done. And that's why I really like him in this, is because he's playing this absurdity, that these this constant contradiction of his character. And you
Oh,
get some even
absolutely.
yeah and you get like great moments, like when he's chopping the tree and the blood just keeps spraying over him, and he's just kind of keeps going at it as it keeps cartoonishly covering him.
And it's such a unique style of humor in this movie. Very, very macabre and very fun.
Yeah, I was watching the movie and a bunch of Elfman scores, and then I totally forgot. Oh, it's been 3 hours of like listening to Elfman.
Oh, nice story of my life. But before we get into Elfman, which I've got a lot to say, and I'm sure you gentlemen do as well, I just want to go back to the this really strong supporting cast. Now, I don't, th I mean, I guess if people haven't seen it, it would be spoiler territory. So I guess if people haven't seen it, we will refrain from the spoilers. But Miranda Richardson is delightful here. The late great Michael Gambon is basically the leader of this small town upstate New York, and we also have Casper Van Dien, who plays Christina Ricci's like jealous boyfriend. We've got Jeffrey Jones, who is like the town pastor, and he has a sordid criminal history that we don't really have to get into. Jeffrey Jones was awesome in the 80s and 90s, but not so much in the 21st century. But yeah, I digress on that. We also have Christopher Lee, Ian McDiarmid is in it, Michael Gough, who I believe Tim Burton kind of tempted him back into working. He was retired. He played, of course, Alfred in the first four Batman movies, and Burton just needed to have him in this movie, and he got him. So that was cool. So yeah, just a really strong supporting cast here, really fun. And of course, Lisa Marie, Ray Park, and of course the great Christopher Walken. So yeah, this movie, like I said, was it won the Oscar that year for best art direction, deservedly so. And it's really a shame because I don't think, aside from Big Fish, I don't think Tim Burton has made a movie of this caliber since. Alan, what do you think? Do you think Burton has made some good ones since then, since Big Fish?
I would say that they're enjoyable, definitely. But I love how you call that Big Fish because that's one of my favorite movies. Just a really
Agreed.
great father-son story. And it's nice when he gets away from trying to be fantastical and instead trying to be grounded in reality. And I think that it stretches his own creativity because he wants to be like weird and quirky, and he isn't in these movies. And I think that makes him creatively better. And man, just talking about how it makes all those supernatural things in Sleepy Hollow that much more fantastical, because it's so grounded in reality in terms of, oh, I'm Johnny Depp, and I'm going to play this forensic scientist and bring out this weird kit and wear these weird goggles and have all these like chemistry tests going on. And then it takes just a left turn into like severed heads and a weird weirdness, not to get into spoiler territory.
Yeah, Ichabod Crane is not an action hero, which I love. He is like, yes, grounded in reality for sure. He's a man of science, which is great. Sort of like a Sherlock Holmes in a way, but a little more awkward, a little more nervous, and just more fun to watch. I think Johnny Depp was perfect in this role. And sadly, since Sleepy Hollow, we have not had the best track record for Burton. Even though he
I
is
was
my.
gonna say, because after this, he hit the brick wall that is his remake of Planet of the Apes.
Oh, yeah. And that movie had Mark Wahlberg as the quintessential action hero, That movie also looked fantastic. It had great creature effects, great set design, and of course Elfman's score. But the movie itself was just awful, and just I just
And that ending, ugh.
yeah. I
Oh,
remember
with Abraham
Abe
Lincoln.
Lincoln.
Yeah, I think I was very close. I should have walked out on this movie. I should have just left the theater, but I stayed to the bitter end, I paid for it. But yeah, Planet of the Apes was awful. The next year he did Big Fish, which he redeemed himself for that. However, the following year, 2 years later, he did Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, which was a little strange. I think that was the first instance where he used Depp in kind of a fantasy role, and that was just not very good at all. Corpse Bride was decent, but that's just because we had been wanting sort of a spiritual follow-up to Nightmare Before Christmas. And then we got Sweeney Todd rather, where he sort of redeemed himself again. So his career is kind of like an up and down roller coaster. And
I
since
think we're all just kind of waiting for that big one again. Like he's had ones that are okay, he's had ones that aren't. He's just been he hasn't like reached the heights of like, like you said, Sleepy Hollow, like of his classic work. And I think everybody's kind of waiting for him to kind of come back and just do something that's just wows everybody again, like he used to be able to do.
10 years ago, actually, 2014, he did Big Eyes, which was that was a glimpse
Yeah,
back.
Big Eyes was a step in the right direction.
Yeah, but since then, he before that he did Alice in Wonderland, and Dark Shadows is one of the worst movies ever made, in my opinion. He did Frankenweenie, which was a nice callback to his original work working for Disney back in the 80s. But then he did stuff like Dumbo and Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, which I didn't particularly love. And
Which
next
is sad because I haven't seen the movie, but the book was really good. And I remember when I was like, "Oh, Tim Burton's doing it." I'm like, "That's a good choice for this. It's basically Tim Burton's X-Men. This could is what it could have been." And but I did not hear good things about the
No,
end of the end results of the movie.
it was pretty forgettable, unfortunately. And then he did Dumbo, which was, I mean, it looked good and had a very good score, but I think that's like most of his movies. And then this year we have Beetlejuice, which I'm very nervous about. I'm actually not nervous. I'm like 99% sure it's gonna stink. I hope I'm wrong. Please, please, please.
Yeah, maybe this is it. Maybe this is the Burton
I
moment we've been waiting for.
really hope it
Here's to
is.
hoping they have a good sandworm in that movie.
Yeah.
I know, but I just hope they kind of use like the same special effects company that they did back in 1988, because those sandworms looked ridiculously silly, and I hope we get that similar that I hope we have a nice callback to that style this year. We'll see. I mean, what makes me nervous is because I was not impressed with what Michael Keaton's return as Batman. I was expecting so much more, so I'm expecting so much less with Beetlejuice. So I don't know what's going to happen, and I do hope it's a good movie, obviously. So fingers crossed, fingers crossed. So, gentlemen, I wanted to just talk a little bit about my personal favorite film composer, Mr. Daniel Robert Elfman, who started off in the punk rock band Oingo Boingo in the 70s and 80s. And in 1985, he did his first film score with Tim Burton's first feature film, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, 1985. And since then, he's created some of the most beautiful music that moviegoers have had the privilege to listen to. And he just over the decades, he's time and time again has proven himself as one of the greatest living composers. So Alan, are you an aficionado of Mr. Elfman's work?
I didn't realize I was an aficionado until I started doing research for this. Because he's basically my childhood. You have movies like Dick Tracy, Pee-wee's Big Adventure, Weird Science, Batman, Darkman. And it's like, oh wow, this is like the guy that like gave me freaking nightmares growing up. Because it's like, oh, I'm having a nightmare of like a weird truck driver, and I just hear his score and like a truck horn going off at the same time. It's like, oh, thanks, Danny. And I never knew what he looked like until like recently. And it's like, oh, of course he would look like this weird guy. Because just like the emotions he can elicit using strings or non-traditional instruments or horns to be bombastic is just like old school filmmaking where you're not creating a score because you're just creating a score and you want to make a sound. You're looking at the pictures on screen and saying, oh, what does this make me feel as a composer? And how do I get that into other people's emotional heart?
Yeah.
And it's just wonderful that he does that.
Telling you, some of his greatest cues, especially from the late 80s into the 90s. And it's really a shame because for Batman and Edward Scissorhands, he wasn't even nominated for an Academy Award, which is, I think, a crime
Yeah.
because those are two of his greatest scores.
That Batman, the Bat, like it's the thing of there's a reason why, like, you have John Williams as Superman and Danny Elfman's Batman are some of the most iconic, like nothing has ever come close to touching how like definitive of a character those theme songs are. Like you hear them, you know Superman, you know Batman based on those theme songs alone. Like,
Yeah.
and I was like even like because I think what helped it was even the animated series adapted Elfman's theme song for its main theme, keeping that thing like, yes, this is Batman's theme song.
And
Yeah, he rearranged it for the cartoon for the anime series.
that was 1992, so the same year as Batman Returns. So that was really the year of Batman, I'd say. And they definitely adapted that theme into the main title, which was fantastic. And honestly, every time I watch Batman Returns, whether it be at home or in a theater, I get chills when I hear the music in the opening title, where you're in the sewer, and then the Batman Returns logo pops up, and then just Elfman's Batman theme in full force. You can't beat that.
Well, I feel like if we're talking about Elfman, it's like I think he's also one of those directors that falls in the same camp of how you associate him so much with a certain director too. Like the fact that really, like while as Elfman has a huge breadth of work outside of him, most of his most iconic stuff is with Tim Burton in the same way as say John Williams with like Spielberg. And so it's the fact that you have this associating between the director and the composer. That's so I think you really can't imagine Burton without Elfman and kind of vice versa.
But there is something though. Tim Burton has used other composers, for various projects. I think the first one that he didn't use Elfman for was Ed Wood. I think he used Howard Shore for that.
I think you're in.
But they're basically inseparable. And actually, it reminds me of Bernard Herrmann and Alfred Hitchcock, and their chemistry and their work over the decades. And actually, Bernard Herrmann is an influence on Elfman. He's said it in interviews, and it definitely shows. Because and it's funny too because he adapted Bernard Herrmann's Psycho score in 1998 for the atrocious Anne Heche Vince Vaughn
Oh,
movie,
for the remake.
the remake. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
But that was just basically a love letter to Herrmann. And
Which actually that brings up one of the things I was not aware. Like, even though I'm looking he was nominated for, I was not aware he did the score for, like, speaking of Gus Van Sant, for Good Will Hunting. And that is
yeah,
a
that's right.
beautiful film score.
Yeah, that is a beautiful score, especially the finale. It's got a very interesting instrumentation, and it just sounds very heavenly and like ethereal. That year was that was his first nomination. He had two nominations that year at the Oscars, Good Will Hunting and Men in Black, like the polar opposites in movie styles. But unfortunately,
You
he
want to talk about iconic theme song, Men in Black. That is
a good one.
iconic.
Actually, the main title is fantastic. However, I am in love with the finale, where basically the camera pans out of New York City, out of the United States, into the Earth, and then into space, and it's just so perfect. Elfman, he combines, he had really great instrumentation there with a beautiful choir, and yeah, again, he didn't win that year. He was nominated twice and he lost. He lost to actually James Horner for Titanic, which
no.
a good score, but I don't think, I mean, I don't know. It, very different scores. It's kind of hard to compare. But
yeah, absolutely. I just can't believe he wasn't nominated for Edward Scissorhands, because when I think of like beautiful, ethereal,
yes.
This is how you're gonna end the movie on like beauty, like just that snowfall. It's like that. I will always pair that with the voices, and it's just
yes.
I can't believe he wasn't nominated for that.
No,
that's a crime.
Not even a nomination. Like if I were on that voting committee, I would have totally thrown his name in the hat. And it's really sad because Edward Scissorhands is probably his greatest score. I tell people that my favorite of his is Batman Returns, because it combines the Christmas beauty of Edward Scissorhands with the triumphant heroism of Batman. So you combine both of those musical worlds into one gorgeous score. That's Batman Returns. And,
yeah,
you
and
know,
to talk about Batman just a little bit, he had to invent superhero music. He didn't want to sound like Superman. And besides Superman, we didn't have like a Caped Crusader. And he basically like gave the blueprint of, oh, this is how you're going to score a superhero movie from now on. And just to like pull it out of his hat, out of his brain, is just phenomenal, because there's so many cues that you get from how many other Batman video games like that came out this year, or last year, I should say, with the Suicide Squad. Or Kill the Suicide Squad, excuse me.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say,
still
like, I'm
using
a very
that iconic da-da-da-da-da.
I
like
know.
Even I'm a big fan of, you talk about the Batman video games, the Arkham series has a great score to it, but you can tell that is, even though it's an original thing, it is still heavily inspired by the Elfman theme. It's still, it's doing its own thing, but you can always hear that Elfman influence anytime somebody does a good Batman score. Like, yeah, like the Arkham, like Arkham City has an amazing theme song, and it's like, yeah, there's Elfman's influence in there.
Right. And you know what? I want to go back a little bit to the animated series, which was interesting, because Shirley Walker, she was a great composer in her own right. She was, I believe, the conductor on the first Batman score. And then Elfman, I guess, referred her to Paul Dini and Bruce Timm to compose original music for the Batman animated series, the run of that. So basically they used Elfman's theme and she did the score, and she did the full score for Mask of the Phantasm, which is an amazing score. The Birth of Batman, the finale there, the main title. that's my top five favorite Batman movies for sure. And
Mask of the Phantasm is amazing.
Like that's how you write film music. That's how you tell Batman's origin story. That's the way to do it. So I just want to mention real quick that I actually had the privilege of meeting Mr. Elfman twice. First time was back in 2010, around the time he had done Alice in Wonderland, and he had an exhibit. Well, Tim Burton had an exhibit at the Museum of Modern Art, and I met Danny at the exhibit. I was shaking. I'm still shaking thinking about this. But he autographed my Batman DVD. He was very cool. Got a photo with him. And then fast forward like over a decade at Tribeca Film Festival, I got to interview him and on the red carpet for Next Exit. It's a film that I believe his daughter was involved with. So he was there because he did the score, and that's still the greatest moment of my life, is that those 5 minutes chatting with Mr. Elfman. So yeah, he's still going strong, and I think he's got some more great scores in him, and I can't wait to hear it. Beetlejuice should have it won't be a great movie, but it'll have a great score. That's my prediction right now. And I just want to mention that 2002's Spider-Man score was the score that made Danny Elfman my absolute favorite film composer. So yeah, guys, we have a couple minutes left, and I just want to go around. Any plugs, anything, any projects you're working on, Mr. Imperial?
No projects I'm working on. Well, actually, yes. If you're going to be at PAX, I don't know when this is going to be aired, but if you're going to be at PAX East, check out Charismatic Cosplay 101. in the Arachnid room on Thursday 6 p.m. because Rufio cosplay and Pinoy cosplay, which is me on Instagram, are going to be helping you to level up your charisma stats.
And the best Captain Hook cosplayer in the world. My
Ah, good form, sir. Good form.
yes. Bangarang. All right, that's very cool. PAX East, looking forward to that. Mr. Godfrey, how about you, sir? Anything going on?
No,
All
no cosplay. No, that
right.
maybe replaying the Batman Arkham series. Now that
Do
I've
it.
talked about
Love it. Love it. Anything
yeah, I
going
need a palate cleanser for Kill the Suicide Squad.
Yeah, I still have yet to try that one. I have not
Oh,
had the chance to
don't
yet.
try that game. It's insult
You
to
know,
gamers.
I get a weird. I want to know. I'm not. I don't. Not looking forward to it, but I still want to try it.
Do the 2 hour. I recommend then set a timer for 90 minutes, play it on Steam for 90 minutes, and then return it.
That might be what ends up happening. I mean, it can't be any worse than the Marvel Avengers game, but who
It is
knows?
worse. I played both. It is worse.
Oh no.
Cuz it's at least with the Marvel Avengers, it's like the characters are differentiable. Like, oh, I'm using Black Widow, so I have like combat that's close quarters. Oh, I have the Hulk, so I'm going to smash. I'm using Kamala Khan, so I have like a little like medium range or stretchiness. And it
Fair,
feels very
fair.
samey between the four different characters, except for movement. So if you're into parkour and you're into level movement, there's no differentiation between the characters if you're about dealing damage.
Fair,
Now,
fair.
I'm not much of a gamer, but was the Avengers game made by the same people who did the Spider-Man 1 and 2?
So, no.
Okay.
No,
No, Square
no.
Enix made Avengers, and I can't
Yeah,
remember
specifically
which.
Crystal Dynamics.
Thank you, Crystal. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And it's just
And Insomniac Games made the Spider-Mans.
Oh,
Gotcha.
I was thinking all the way back to like the PS2 games.
Yeah.
Oh, I had those. I had the first one when it coincided with the Tobey Maguire movie. That
That's
wasn't
exactly what I was thinking, bro.
that was a fun one, yeah.
Yeah, they perfected a web slinging in that, and that is actually inspired the new Spider-Man's in the PS5, PS4s.
Nice. Perfect. Perfect.
I could talk about that game forever.
Same.
That's another episode, gentlemen. So guys, I just want to thank you so much for tonight. This was a great chat. I could talk Elfman forever. Same with Burton, but I think we covered a lot of ground tonight. And you know, for those who have not seen 1999 Sleepy Hollow, please do yourself a favor and check it out. It's just a fun movie, especially if you're a Johnny Depp completist. And you know, this was one of his last movies where he actually played himself. To an extent. And you know, it's kind of sad because I don't know if we're ever going to get that from him again. You know, we just got these really weird cartoonish characters who are just kind of dopey and like, I don't know. I'm just not a fan of the Jack Sparrow movies. And but yeah, I want more of this Depp. Yeah, this is the Depp we need, but you know, maybe we won't have that anymore. So just go back to 1999, 25 years ago, and check this one out.
You want the depth that pushes children into danger and not him.
Yeah.
True.
I miss him. I want more of it. But you never know. We might get that. Anyway, oh, and as for me, if you want to check out new episodes of Under the Radar, you can check them out on SiriusXM through Slam Radio every Thursday at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, on Slam Radio. And that is on SiriusXM channel 145. Also, feel free to check out the video portion of this podcast on Manhattan Neighborhood Network. And that is every Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. And as always, feel free to check out the Under the Radar YouTube channel, subscribe, and share the love. So, Eric, Dobby, Alan, thank you so much, gentlemen. Always a pleasure. And this has been Under the Radar. I'm Randy Younger, your host. Under the Radar, bringing movies and people together one frame at a time. We'll see you next time. Take care.